And joining me now in the KRVS studios, I am delighted to say, is artist Linda Fries. She is professor emerita here at UL Lafayette, retired in 2016, I believe, and has been a full working artist. I think you're one of the poster children of how to fail at retirement or succeed, or, you know, you didn't skip a beat, and you started working madly. And for quite a while, you've not only been working here, but you have been working around the world, particularly in Italy, but in other places as well. And it feels like you've just intensified some of that work. You're here today to talk in general about your art, but there is an opening in Brobridge at the Tesh Center for the Arts this Saturday, an exhibit of some of your latest work. The exhibit is called Wild Trees, Photo Etchings and Paintings by Linda Fries. So people will see some of your wonderful collage paintings that you've been doing for a while, but some new work that is a photo etching. And we're going to talk a bit about that process. But first, let's talk about trees. Because no matter what method you're using, you're addressing trees and trees from so many different places. What draws you to trees?
Well, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for having me again. I have been photographing on my travels, and I'm just inevitably drawn to these really remarkable trees. And some of them are really old and sacred trees, but some of them are just
beautiful.
Trees. Yeah, they're just, you know,
or massive, or
these plants that you encounter. And when I'm working, I sometimes listen to books on tape. So I've been listening to this book called The Hidden Life of Trees. And I probably heard it about three different times. And he talks about the relationships with trees, what they feel, or how they communicate with each other, and also how they're interconnected. So I was up in the Redwood Forest last summer for about 8 days, and it's actually one big organism that goes along the West Coast there, and the trees they speak to each other, and they're also helping each other grow and taking out toxins and helping trees that need help with moisture or minerals or, you know, all. Or the and then the mushroom world underneath. It's just, I think mushrooms are going to be the next thing.
So
that's
I'm sure there are people out there going, so Tolkien didn't have it too far off with the Ents, the tree people in Tolkien, the big tree
right.
people.
Right.
So he felt something too, I guess. Now, you mentioned the Redwood Forest. Give us a sense of how many different places you've photographed trees. How many you photographed, obviously, in Louisiana?
A lot in Louisiana. Yeah. And probably the most frequent place I've gone to is Lake Martin over and over again since I moved here in the 1980s. So I've been going there for decades. And I photographed in the Redwood Forest last year, but I also have been photographing in the jungles in Costa Rica and Mexico. And then out west in Wyoming, in the mountains of Wyoming, where my brother lives, so I get to go visit him out there. And it was really in the fall that I started to see that all the pictures had trees in them, and it started to occur to me that this was a theme that was going through all the work, and it could be a title for the show so that people could look and see the conversations that these trees are having, and they're sort of talking to you, and you can have a conversation with them too. So there's a lot of narrative in the work about how trees would communicate if we would believe that they're communicating. How would they say things to us or convey things to us? For example, when I was in the Redwood Forest, that was where I got the idea to make these really long, skinny pieces. So you can see the root system and all the way up to the overstories of the trees and the different micro environments that are in each of those layers. And I wanted to show that, but I also wanted to convey that you can never see it all at once. You can only see a portion of it because it's a very complex environment. And so in these tall, thin artworks, you can't take it all in. You have to really scan. You have to actually move your head and your body to see it. And I loved that idea because it's so similar to how we take in the visuals of looking at trees or being near trees.
But you can't do what a lot of people do in galleries and just kind of sweep their eyes and go on to the next piece there. You have to stop and look up and look down on these pieces.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Let's see what people do. Now, you didn't mention Italy. Do you have some photographs of trees in Italy, or is that a part of this show?
Yes, it is. I've been interested in prehistoric art for so long, and I found this place up in the Alps in northern Italy. It's a place I visited years and years ago, but I discovered an artist residency there, and I applied, and they brought me over. And last year was my second year there, and the place is called Valcamonica, and it's the woods are filled with these petroglyphs, these very ancient carvings into the rocks there. And I've been photographing them and then layering them into my collage pictures. So there's a number of those petroglyphs, and they're very old. They represent the work of over 500 generations of artists. They go back more than 10,000 years in the woods in northern Italy. So there are a number of those petroglyphs in the show.
Well, do you find, just as if you travel around the world, you expect to find different customs, different accents, different languages. Do you find that when you are attentive to trees in these different places, because you talk about the communication between the trees themselves, and also if you're open, you can feel a kind of communication with them. Do you feel a difference in different countries and different places?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There are different climates, and there's different ways that you encounter them. In Valcamonica, the forest there is filled with chestnut trees, and they were dropping these bright green spiky seeds on the ground. And I had read about the chestnut trees because I read this story called Overstory by Richard Powers, and it's a collection of short stories about people who become obsessed with a tree, a certain kind of tree. And one of the stories is about a guy who plants a chestnut tree. And when I was growing up in New England, there were chestnut trees everywhere. And then there was some kind of blight that wiped out all the chestnut trees all across the United States. And in the novel, this man has the last chestnut tree in the United States. Well, when I was in northern Italy last fall, among all these chestnuts, I thought, oh, these are the trees that that I grew up with that don't exist anymore in the U.S., and they were everywhere. So it's interesting to see how something that seems so permanently forever can suddenly collapse. Mm. And so that's another theme of the show, too, is looking at our relationships with the environment and also the kind of changes that are happening and how we as humans are responding or thinking about them.
Well, it's fascinating that you've mentioned so many pieces of writing addressing this issue. I think for a long time, people interested in trees were dismissed with the phrase tree hugger. If you were an environmentalist or interested in that. But it sounds like it's becoming a much more nuanced and complex field, this interaction with writers and artists with trees. Do you feel that too? Do you encounter, you obviously read a lot. Other people?
When people started to say that plants talk, they were dismissed. And now people are beginning to think, well, maybe they are communicating in a way that we didn't recognize before. And the more we find out about it, for example, there was an albino redwood tree that we went to visit, and it was completely white. It was so striking. It was beautiful. And it's very rare. But they believe that this tree takes the heavy metals, leaches them from the soil, and pulls it into the tree to protect the other trees around it. So trees and mushrooms do a lot to protect the other elements that are in their mini eco-environment.
Fascinating. Well, you're an artist. You reach out to these writers and learn more about trees from them. But you express yourself through art. I think many people in this area are familiar with your photo collages and more recently your beautiful painted photo collages that you have done, many of which have trees in them. As you said, you've been noticing that all along. But you have learned a new technique that you're very excited about, and many pieces in the show, which opens this Saturday at the mm-hmm. Tesh Center for the Arts in Brobridge, many of the pieces in that show will be these photo etchings. Tell us about that process.
Sure. I pursued studying the photo etching with an ArtSpark grant from the Acadiana Center for the Arts and LEDA, the Lafayette Economic Development Authority, okay. And they helped me go to study with two master printmakers. I knew what I wanted to make, but I wasn't quite sure how to go about it, and I really wanted to jumpstart the project by working with somebody who could intensely help me day by day. And we worked on a fairly new process called solar plate printing, and I made a negative which looks like it's a giant negative. It's on plastic, and you do the plastic is the same size as the plate itself, and you do an exposure on top of the plate, which is light sensitive, and then you wash the plate in water. It's a non-toxic process, and the coating washes away where it's been exposed, and where it hasn't been exposed, it stays smooth. So when you put the ink on, the ink on the highlights rubs off, but the ink that's inside of the etched areas holds the ink and holds the texture or the pattern or whatever kind of visual image is trapped in the metal, and then you run it through a press with a piece of paper on top and very high intensity, a lot of poundage in the press, and it makes this it makes this value system that's really different than the digital photographs that we see, or even the prints that we make in the darkroom, gelatin silver prints, although it really is similar to gelatin silver prints in terms of the tonality, the very rich blacks, very dense blacks, and a lot of information, a lot of detail, a lot of photographic detail in the etching.
So these pieces will be black and white.
They're black and white. Mm-hmm. They are. And some of them use the Shin Kole technique, which has an added layer of paper, which is a Japanese rice paper. And it's transparent, so you can pick up layers of information. And a lot of my work has those layers to it. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I really took to the Shin Kole, which is French for gluing China? Is it China?
Porcelain.
China glue?
Sheen?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So it's so I have a few of those too.
Well, you did bring one of the plates here, and it is lovely. As a piece of art itself, it is so layered, as you said, and so delicate. And it looks like there's a dog in it. Is there a dog in this piece?
Yes, there is. That's Ned.
Amidst all of the trees.
This one's called Ned and the Mushroom. So I've been photographing my dogs through the years too, and different animals. And the tree that's in this particular image is from the Shadows on the Tesh, which is a really famous tree. Somebody this morning was looking at the print and said to me, "I know where that tree is." And I said, no, you don't. You don't know where that tree is. Because, yeah, that's at the shadows of the Tesh. That's a very famous tree.
There are trees around here that people have special relationships with, and they are iconic trees. And you did spend a year's residency at Shadows on the Tesh and made wonderful art that year and included a lot of trees. I remember that.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All the trees are named after the people that lived there.
That's right. That's right. So your animals are included in the conversation with the trees and the mushrooms in this piece.
They are.
So the pieces with the redwood that you mentioned, are those part of this process too? Or
yes, and especially the really long, skinny one that I did, which I'm calling "In the Presence of Giants," and it has the different stories of the tree, you know, tiny sections of it. But I think what we understand is, you know, how we understand something that's so enormous is in small parts, and then we start to put them together.
How many pieces are in the show?
There are 21 pieces in the show. And a lot of the work is not about one particular area. Sometimes especially in the last year or two, I've started to combine the ecosystems. So different bioregions will be slid up against each other or layered on top of each other. And at first I thought, well, gosh, I don't know, should I combine something from California and something from Italy? But actually they're very personal to me, and that's, you know, there's a biographical part of the work too.
Well, it's just like our relationships and conversations with people in our lives, they overlap. And how do you disconnect that?
Right. And I think the work is also about the borders, the borderlines, and the edges of things.
Well, you just finished hanging it, and I know you were very pleased with how it came out. You had some help from fellow artists
to hang
it up. So how does it look in the space?
You know, it's a beautiful space. It's it's been newly renovated, and it's a cultural center, so there are a lot of different things are going to happen there, but they built a stage, so we know there's going to be dancing and music there too, and all kinds of classes and children's projects that are going to go on there. And it's a really sweet space. And the ArtSpark grant was one of the focuses of the ArtSpark was to help artists with projects that they're working on that are brand new, but also to take that research or that art project and bring it into a rural community, not the cities, but to bring it to people who maybe don't go to the museum here in Lafayette or go to the museums in New Orleans or Houston, and to bring really good art into the rural communities.
And to acknowledge that there are artists like yourselves living in smaller communities, living and working and creating art from the trees and the aspects of your community. And it's important to show it there where you create that art.
Another thing I want to mention is the idea of wilderness, which I think is part of the conversation of the exhibition, is what do we perceive as wilderness? How have we experienced it or encountered it ourselves? And also, how is it that our generation has a certain idea about what wilderness is? And then the people who are being born today, as they grow up, there's going to be less spaces that are truly wild. And so their idea of what is wilderness is shifting and changing too. So that's another conversation that I think is opened up in the art, is talking about, you know, what is a truly wild space, and how do we find that, or how do we have a conversation with it, and then how do we love it? How do we protect it?
There's a lot going on in your pieces, Linda. But
I think so. I'm an environmentalist, but I don't think the work is I don't think it's didactic. I don't think it's trying to teach anybody a lesson, but it is asking some questions and opening up ways of imagining those spaces.
Well, then your piece is often like having your dog near the mushrooms and the trees. You've had other pieces where they're clothing or pottery or a piece of sculpture in the midst of the wilderness, the wildness. And there's something very primeval about the trees and the landscape. And yet there is that conversation with the ordinary us and our ordinary things. And no, it's not didactic. It truly is a very organic conversation that happens in your pieces. I wish we had an hour more to talk about these pieces, but people can have that conversation with the pieces themselves and you this coming Saturday in Brobridge. The opening will start at 6 o'clock, I believe, go for a couple hours. Mm-hmm. You will give an artist talk later in the spring in April at the Tesh Center.
Yes.
So people can look forward to that,
yes,
as well.
And I'll bring some of the plates, too, so people can really understand how the photo etching process works.
Perfect. That's this Saturday, the 15th, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Tesh Center for the Arts. My guest, artist Linda Fries, professor emerita here at UL Lafayette, continuing to create amazing art. And we hope everyone gets a chance to see this exhibit. Thank you so much, Linda.
Thank you, Judith.
Tune in.
Sintonice.
To La Vellonera.
A La Vellonera.
Thursdays at 7 p.m.
Jueves a las 7 de la noche.
On KRVS 88.7 FM.
En KRVS 88.7 FM. Welcome to La Vellonera.
Bienvenido a La Vellonera.
Enjoy Zydeco blues and old-school R&B on the Zydeco Stomp, Saturdays from noon to 3, only on KRVS 88.7 FM and online at krvs.org.
This is KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles at krvs.org.